Lizzie Borden took an axe and gave her mother 40 whacks. When she saw what she had done, she gave her father 41.
So she whacked off her dad 41 times.
There you go.
Dang.
I thought people are freaking out.
That's our cold open for today. We're obviously covering Lizzie Borden. Very famous and talked about true crime story.
Yeah.
You can still go visit the house. Where's it at? Is it Boston or New York or?
It is in Fall River, Massachusetts.
Massachusetts. Those New Englanders, man.
See, I remember being like in high school and for some ever whatever reason thinking it was like out in the prairie somewhere, like maybe like
it's
Iowa.
It's like on the corner of a street in a town.
Yeah. It's in a town.
Yeah.
Literally in a town in Massachusetts. Like, it's not in the country at all. It's not even like on a farmstead or nothing. It's in a town.
You can go there, pay, stay the night in one of the rooms. You can even sit on the couch where Mr. Borden was sleeping when he got hit.
If I'm not mistaken, that is a reproduction of the original couch.
It probably is.
Well, I mean, there's been a lot of blood on there.
It's the same spot, you know, but the house is original. Yes. Like, everything there is original. Even the wallpaper is still there. Like, they kept everything the same, but obviously you can't sit on a couch with blood all over it.
Yeah,
the health department would say no.
Yeah, and at that point, you'd start having, like, deterioration.
You can actually go where the mom laid there and bled out. You can go in the basement and look up in the ceiling and see the blood soaked through the wood where it stained through the wood because she bled so much.
Oh, yeah.
So that's crazy.
Yeah, the whole case is crazy. And so
today we're just going to talk about the story of it and what happened. And then we're going to save the speculation and the theories and all and the trial for next time.
Yeah, we kind of talked it over. I know on TikTok I made it sound like we're going to do the whole shebang today, but we decided
there's a lot to it.
Just to kind of make it to where everything gets its fair shake, we're going to do the actual thing itself and then, you know, the actual event. And then we're going to talk about, as Noah said, the trial, the aftermath, and the paranormal portion of it in next week in part two. So most of you are probably familiar with the Lizzie Borden story, at least with the schoolyard rhyme. That's how most people get their introduction to Lizzie Borden.
There's been lots of movies made about
it. Lots of movies, lots of theories, lots of coverages from other podcasts and YouTube channels and TikToks and everything else. But I kind of figured...
What's funny? There's a lot of movies, but they haven't made a good movie.
They haven't. And here's the thing, is like a lot of the movies have started to perpetuate this. One of the theories, and it only came up like in the last 10 years, is that Lizzie Borden had a secret affair with the maid. Mm. There is zero evidence.
They thought she was a lesbian.
Huh?
They thought she was a lesbian.
Yeah, that's like been a theory, is that Lizzie Borden would kill the folks, and then her and the maid would live off of daddy's money after the fact.
Or dad didn't approve of it and she snapped.
That was another part of it too. Yeah. Is that
there's a lot of theories, guys. Lots of them.
But there's absolutely...
There's even a thought that an intruder popped in and killed him for the money and like there's all kinds of theories.
Yeah, there's zero evidence about the lesbian theory. That's a fairly new one and I think something that has to just do with the way our society is today. But there's zero evidence to say that there was some lesbian relationship.
It makes sense, though.
I mean, it wouldn't...
Back then, being gay was like, you just don't do it, right? Like, you don't let people know. Obviously, there was the same amount of gay people back then as there is today, right? But people hid it more. Mm-hmm. People wouldn't talk about it because there was judgment, and you would get killed in some places if you were gay.
Yeah, a lot of times you'd be ostracized from a community.
Murdered. I mean, it happened.
It did happen.
So,
I mean, not to say that Lizzie Borden and the maid didn't have a relationship, but I'm just saying that there's been zero evidence to point that in any direction, and I don't know where
it could have just been a cute little flirty relationship. Like, who knows? That it might not have been a full-on affair.
Right, but like I said, there's never been any kind of letters that have ever been found. No one's ever talked about it. There's never been anyone ever said, hey, I think Lizzie Borden and maid are getting it on. There's never been anything historically documented that says that ever happened.
I think this story is the closest related cousin to the Amityville horror. Like, kills her whole family and, you know, it's very similar.
Especially at the turn of the century, you had a lot of axe murders.
Yeah.
We did the Villisca axe house murders what, almost a year ago.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we talked about the Northern...
the German ones.
There was the German ones. I wasn't there for that one.
I don't remember the name of it. Yeah.
Hinterkaifeck. Yeah, Hinterkaifeck. Because, I mean, almost everybody had a hatchet or an axe at that time. Because you had to chop your own firewood. So having an axe or a hatchet was fairly common. So that's why it was a pretty common murder weapon.
Yeah.
And like I said, around the time of the Villisca axe murders, you also had the New Orleans axe murders. And of course, there ended up being actually a whole host of axe murders that went up that rail line, which Villisca sat on, which we talked about in that episode. They thought
he might have done it, right?
Yes. There was a hypothesis that the guy that committed, or whoever it was that committed the Villisca axe murders, also committed that entire string of axe murders along that entire rail system.
It was just like a traveling axe hobo.
Yeah, it was actually like a statistician that uncovered it.
Yeah.
And if you guys are new to listening to the podcast, there is a episode and we talk about all of that in fairly good detail. So to kind of kick us off, Lizzie Borden, her name, you wouldn't believe it if I didn't tell you, her full name was Lizzie Andrew Borden.
Yeah.
Yep, middle name was a boy's name.
They wanted her to be a boy.
It's possible, I suppose. She was born July 19th of 1860.
Was her dad Andrew?
I believe Andrew so, actually.
Borden. Yeah. That's weird.
I think you are right.
That is weird.
She also went by Lizbeth, L-I-Z-B-E-T-H. But she also she died June 1st of 1927, so she lived a fairly long life. So she was accused of killing her father and her stepmother in Fall River, Massachusetts. No one else has ever been charged for the murder, even though there was some suspicions cast elsewhere, but no one else was ever brought to trial. They charged
her, right?
Yeah, she was formally charged.
If they charge someone for murder, they can't charge someone else again.
No, they can't charge her again.
They can't charge her again. Okay. Correct. So they can find the real killer after that.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, you just can't charge the same person again. It's called double jeopardy.
Okay.
So here's kind of what ends up happening. Lizzie Borden, she was born July 19th of 1860, like we said, in Fall River, Massachusetts, to a Sarah Anthony Borden, which was her biological mother.
And another boy, Anthony.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Well, if I remember right, there was a tradition even back then in those days in the 1800s where even women would have the middle name of their father.
Especially if there wasn't a boy in the family, that's probably why.
And since women usually took the surname of their husband, it was a way for that, in a way, for that lineage to carry on.
Yeah.
Her father's name was Andrew Jackson Borden. Her father was of English and Welsh descent, and he grew up in very hard times. His family was poor. They struggled financially, but they were surrounded by, and they were descended by, wealthy and influential residents. He actually ended up becoming very prosperous himself in the manufacturing of selling and furniture and caskets. Ironic.
Yeah.
He also became a very successful property developer.
If I remember right, he also made like furniture too.
Yes, right. He made and sold furniture and caskets. He was also a director of several textile mills and owned considerable commercial property. And he was also the president of the Union Savings Bank. Now, this comes in handy to know down the road because of maybe possibly serving as a motive. It is well known that Andrew Jackson Borden was a avid penny pincher. He scrimped and saved because of how he grew up. If you guys are familiar with history at all, it's like when like kids who grew up during the Great Depression, when they became adults, they didn't trust the banks.
It's like my great grandma, she saved everything.
Yes,
right.
They would put bacon grease in jars. They would save. They would make and save lard. Table scraps got put in containers and put in the refrigerator.
You better eat everything on your plate.
Every single thread and button was put in a container, and money was not put in the bank. They usually put that in some kind of tin or a keep safe or a safety deposit box, or not fire safety box or something like that, and they kept it in the house because they didn't trust the banks and didn't trust financial institutions at all because of, well, the Great Depression. So Typically, people who grew up poor end up becoming massive penny pinchers as adults. And Andrew Jackson Borden was no different. At his death, his estate was valued at $300,000, which in 2021 money is the equivalent of $9 million, and in 2022 is the equivalent to $9,630,000.
Yeah. And they, funny, they had a mediocre house. Like, it was just okay. Exactly. You know?
Yeah, their diet. Okay, so at the time of the axe murders, throughout most of Lizzie Borden's childhood, their diet was mutton based, which is a cheap cut of lamb.
Speaking of their diet, you know what's really funny? I heard that when they were murdered, Lizzie, him, and the wife all had food poisoning. They were suffering from food poisoning. They were sick with fevers because he was making them re-eat leftover fish all week that they had at like an event. Yeah. And so they kept the fish and the icebox didn't keep it, you know.
That makes sense.
They were just re-eating it and they were sick as hell when they got killed.
Well, that would make
sense. And Lizzie was sick. She had just gotten over it. So I remember that was an interesting fact, and it just explains a rich guy who's eating leftover fish every day for a week, getting sick. I mean, every day the fish gets worse and worse, and then he finally gets sick off of it, but he doesn't care. He wants to save money.
Yeah.
You know?
That's the way he was.
Yeah. That's a little known fact that nobody talks about.
And you're dead right about the whole house thing. Like, for instance, even in that time period, indoor plumbing was starting to become a thing for the wealthy. Here he was sitting on, to the day's equivalent of millions of dollars, could have afforded to put it in, didn't. Oh, yeah.
Yep. Lizzie probably resented him because of that. Like, we're living in squalor. Not really squalor, but
she did. I remember hearing something about how she would want to go get new dresses.
Yeah.
Go do this. Go see that. And Andrew Borden was like, absolutely not. You got plenty. Right. You have more than enough. And what you got is fine. And
see, that's the thing. He ends up dying with all that money. It's like, if you got all that money, spend it and enjoy it. Live life a little bit, man.
It's just part of that childhood trauma, though. If growing up poor and you don't,
right,
you know what it's like. But he still lived like he was poor. Which, I mean, one of the, and any millionaire will tell you, one of the greatest keys to staying a millionaire is living well within your means,
right,
not trying to surpass it. But I think you can still enjoy it, and you have to, you know,
at least eat decent food.
Oh yeah,
I mean, come on.
Yeah, mutton is not a great cut of because like mutton is like a very cheap cut of meat for like lamb and beef.
Yeah,
it's not very good.
See, I hate leftovers. I rarely eat leftovers.
Really?
I just don't like them.
See, for me, it depends.
It really depends what it is.
Like chili the day after.
Yeah.
Come on.
Well, yeah, but usually like meats leftover, I don't like. You know, like steaks left over and stuff like that. Yeah, because
steak will get tough in the fridge.
Yeah.
You'd have to remarinate.
I couldn't imagine eating the same fish for a week straight.
Or
I would just, ugh. And you don't have a fridge.
Yeah, because back then it was all an icebox.
No microwave, you know?
Yeah, in order to keep meat in an icebox. So they did have like iceboxes back then. But you'd have to go to an ice house, buy a block of ice, put it into literally this box.
Like a cooler.
And then the one compartment's for the block of ice, the other compartment's to keep the food in.
Yeah.
And that's how you would keep the food.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a hassle. And so if something happens, you know, to that ice, it starts to melt or it's not really there, then the icebox is really just nothing more than a cabinet.
See, the reason he was laying on the couch, because he was a workaholic.
Mm-hmm.
The reason he was laying on the couch was because he had just came home from work sick.
And he was asleep.
And he was throwing up and pooping everywhere. Yep. So he laid down on the couch to take a nap.
Yep.
And that's when he got killed.
Yep.
So it all makes sense there.
It does. You know? I mean, and you're right. And you're dead on there. Absolutely dead on. So Borden and her older sister, she did have an older sister named Emma Lenora Borden, had a relatively religious upbringing and attended Central Congregational Church.
They were like all like Presbyterian or Lutheran
something.
Yeah. Yeah.
As a young woman, Lizzie was very involved in church activities, including teaching Sunday school to children of recent immigrants to the United States. She was involved in religious organizations such as the Christian Endeavor Society, for which she served as secretary treasurer.
I bet you she was wild.
Yes. And then 3 years after Lizzie's mother, Sarah, died, Andrew married Abby Durfee Gray. And Lizzie absolutely refused to call this woman mom or mother or by her first name. It was simply Mrs. Borden.
I mean, for the time, she's not a hideous girl.
No, she's plain.
She's plain, but that's how it was back then. Yeah. You either had really freaking ugly or you had plain. And she and with her, she would be considered good looking. You know what I mean?
Have you ever seen pictures of Annie Oakley?
No.
Oh my gosh, dude.
But I think Lizzie would be considered at least cute back then, you know.
Since you got your phone out.
I'm looking her up.
Yeah, I was going to say, Annie Oakley, dude, smoke show. Absolute smoke show.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Yeah, you only had two kinds of women.
I mean, yeah.
People, period. Oh, just ugly or normal, you know.
I mean, and Annie Oakley was...
She's not bad at all. Mm-mm. That's funny.
Yeah. And she could shoot, so
yeah.
Hell yeah.
So I'm seeing Lizzie as like the rebellious daughter who lives with her parents. I can't afford to get out of here. Dad doesn't want to spend money. Oh my God, I just want to go out and drink and just have fun.
Yeah.
You know? That's her.
That's pretty much.
Right. Oh my God, he won't buy me new clothes.
Yeah, she would ask her dad for some money to go out and buy new dresses. Andrew would tell her no. I want to be able to go out to the diner in town. No. I want to be able to do this. No.
Yeah.
So there was this constant, basically, like, monitoring of Lizzie and Emma.
And she was looked down on.
Yes.
Because she couldn't find a husband. She was stuck. Like, you lived with your parents until you got married. You didn't live on your own. I mean, that just didn't happen.
And
you know what I mean?
One of the things was, too, is... If I remember one of the stories I heard right, is really none of the men wanted to mess with Lizzie or Emma for the most part because of how her father was.
Yeah.
Because they didn't want to have to deal with that. It's not like that Andrew Borden was going to, you know, let
pay for the wedding
into the family businesses.
Dude, he was probably an unbearable prick.
It sounds like a massive control freak.
Yeah.
Like he had to be in control of everything and anything. And if he wasn't, then it would just...
He was probably not a pleasant person to be around.
I can't imagine. No. The stories I've read indicate that he was just an absolute turd of a person.
Yeah.
Control everything, control everyone.
Yeah.
That's at least what I'm getting off of all these reports on all these stories.
He would let the house get cold in the winter and get hot in the summer.
Yeah. It's like Ebenezer Scrooge.
Yeah, he basically was. Yeah.
Lizzie did not like her stepmom all that much, and it did start as a cordial relationship, but as time went on, now here's where things gets kind of funny, is that Andrew's new wife, Andrew seemed to let her spend a little more.
Yeah.
And
she had nice coats and clothing and
Lizzie did not like that.
No.
So Lizzie became convinced that because, especially since Sarah was a little younger, she was convinced that Sarah married Andrew simply for the money, and that with her youth and her, you know, good looks at the time, absolutely had Andrew wrapped around her finger and was allowing Sarah to get what she wanted.
That's the cold truth. She probably did marry him for the money.
It was a good, very good point and a very good possibility. Bridget Sullivan, who they called Maggie, the family called Maggie, was Borden's 25-year-old live-in maid who had immigrated to the U.S. from Ireland. She testified that Lizzie and Emma rarely ate meals with their parents. A lot of times
they just didn't like them. Didn't want to be around them.
If Sarah cooked the meal, they just simply took their meals elsewhere.
Yeah.
In May of 1892, Andrew killed multiple pigeons in his barn with a hatchet, believing they were attracting local children to hunt them. Lizzie had recently built a roost for the pigeons and has been commonly recounted that she was upset over his killing of them, though the veracity of this has been disputed. A family argument in July of 1892 prompted both sisters to take extended vacations, quote unquote, in New Bedford. And after returning to Fall River a week before the murders, Lizzie chose to stay in a local rooming house for 4 days before returning to the family residence. So right off the bat, I mean, we've done true crime now for a long time. You have plenty of motive right here.
Yeah.
You've got number one.
Anger.
Anger. Resentment.
Yep.
Money. Okay. You have all this.
You have a new spouse that she hates.
Absolutely.
That's enough of a motive there.
And it's just all spinning out of control for Lizzie. Yeah.
Jealousy.
Now, it's at this point to also note that Emma, during these events, is not in the house. She is out. She's, I can't remember where they said she was at, but she's gone and therefore has a solid alibi of not being involved. So tension grows within the Borden family in the following months before the murder, especially over Andrew's gifts of real estate to various branches of Abby's family. So here you have, I was mistaken. I didn't mean Sarah. I meant Abby. Andrew was giving Abby gifts and giving Abby things and letting her spend money, not Sarah, because Sarah's dead. Sarah is Lizzie's mom. So Abby is the new wife. So allow me to correct myself. So Andrew is gifting Abby's family real estate, which is, by the way, family wealth, and now it's starting to diminish. After their stepmother's sister received a house, the sister's man and received a rental property, the home they had lived in until their mother died, which they purchased from their father for $1. A few weeks before the murders, they sold the property back to their father for $5,000, which is the equivalent to $151,000 in 2021. The night before the murders, and this is important because we're going to bring him up later on during part two, John Vinicum Morris, which was the brother of Sarah, which was the first wife, he came to visit and was invited to stay for a few days to discuss business matters with Andrew. Now, at this point, there are several theories that some of the discussion got rather heated, and very tense. Also to be noted, and not to correct you, but because it's what you said wasn't totally untrue.
Go ahead and correct me.
Is that it wasn't that the family was sick on fish, they were sick on spoiled mutton. It was left on the stove.
That makes sense.
Now, to point something out, back in the day, the medieval days, you could in fact keep a stew in the cauldron boiling over the fire. It would kill the germs. It would keep everything relatively fresh as long as the stew had plenty of fluid in it, water, whatever.
Right.
This was not. It was just simply left on the stove to sit there.
And that's no, a no-no for any food.
Yeah, especially meat. A meat tracks all. It will grow
after 2 hours
immediately.
You can get sick after 2 hours of meat sitting out.
Yeah, because meat is just.
It's got living organisms in it.
Yeah.
You know?
One of the reasons why you cook it beef to at least 160 degrees internal?
Beef is 145.
That's 160.
It depends. I mean, like steak, you can cook it at 135.
That's steak. True. Yeah, yeah.
But like ground beef, it's 160.
Yeah.
Anything like beef, chicken, bird is 160.
Yeah, because you need to kill everything that's in it.
Right.
Because a lot of times there will be parasites and all sorts of stuff. So in order to kill all this to make it edible for consumption, you have to heat it up to kill it.
Right.
And usually...
It's weird how you can cook steak so low. Like you can literally eat steak raw.
You can.
A fresh steak. I wouldn't do it.
No.
But you can.
Yeah.
You know, because it hasn't had time to collect that stuff yet. Right. Beef is just nasty.
Especially if you dry age steak.
Yeah.
Because at that point, everything is dried out of it and nothing can live in it.
Like jerky.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, they just left it sitting out and they ate off of it, got sick.
Yep. And that's a great way to get food poisoning. Fantastic way to get food poisoning. The plan was to use it for meals over the next several days. But Abby had feared poison. Given that Andrew had not been a popular man. So they thought, Abby was like, oh no, someone in the town poisoned Andrew. Food.
Yeah.
If
you think your dad is poisoned by somebody, your dad was probably a prick. That just verifies it right there.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You got a lot of enemies.
Yeah.
It's at this point, we'll talk a little bit about John Morris. So John Morris actually arrived on the evening of August 3rd. And he slept in the guest room the night of the murders. After breakfast the next morning, that night that he arrived, so the night of August 3rd, he stayed in the guest room. After breakfast the next morning, Andrew, Abby, Lizzie, John, and the Borden's maid, Bridget, or Maggie, were present. Andrew and John went to the sitting room where they chatted for nearly an hour. Morris left at around 8:48 a.m. to buy a pair of oxen and visit his niece in Fall River, planning to return to the Borden home for lunch at noon. Andrew left for his morning walk sometime around 9 a.m. So in the house at this point, you've got Lizzie and Emma doing chores. Abby was upstairs between 9 and 10:30 to make the bed. According to forensic investigation, Abby was facing her killer at the time of the attack. She was first struck on the side of the head with a hatchet, then cut her just above the ear, causing her to turn and fall face down on the floor, creating contusions on her nose and forehead. Her killer then struck her multiple times, delivering 17 more direct hits to the back of her head, killing her. When Andrew returned at around 10:30 a.m., his key failed to open the door, so he knocked. Sullivan went to unlock the door, finding it jammed. She uttered a curse. She would later testify that she heard Lizzie laughing immediately after this. She did not see Lizzie, but stated that laughter was coming from the top of the stairs. This was considered significant as Abby had already been dead at this time, and her body would have been visible to anybody on the home's second floor. Lizzie later denied being upstairs and testified that her father had asked her where Abby was, to which she replied that a messenger had delivered Abby a summons to visit a sick friend. Sullivan stated that she had then removed Andrew's boots and helped him into his slippers before he lay down on the sofa for a nap, a detail then contradicted by the crime scene photos, which show Andrew wearing boots. Sullivan then informed Lizzie of a department store sale. Lizzie said Sullivan was welcome to come along with her, but Sullivan felt unwell and went to take a nap in her bedroom instead. So it's at this point we can clarify that, and it's been often reported that Maggie was taking a nap at the time of Andrew's murder.
Yeah.
Sullivan testified that she was in her third floor room, resting from cleaning windows, when just before 11:10 a.m., she heard Lizzie call from downstairs. And this is the quote, "Maggie, come quick. Father's dead. Somebody came in and killed him." Yeah. Andrew was slumped on a couch in the downstairs sitting room, struck 10 to 11 times with a hatchet-like weapon. One of his eyes had been split cleanly in two, suggesting that he had been asleep when attacked. His still-bleeding wound suggested a very recent attack. Dr. Bowen, the family's physician, arrived from his home across the street and pronounced both victims dead. Detectives estimated that Andrew's death had occurred at approximately 11 a.m. So Lizzie Borden's initial answers to the police officer's questions were at times strange and contradictory, and initially she reported hearing a groan or a scraping noise or distress call before entering the house. 2 hours later, she told police she had heard nothing and entered the house not realizing anyone was or anything was wrong. When asked where her stepmother was, she recounted Abby receiving a note asking her to visit a sick friend. She also stated that she thought Abby had returned and asked if someone could go upstairs and look for her. Sullivan and a neighbor, Mrs. Churchill, were halfway up the stairs, their eyes level at the floor, when they locked into the guest room and saw Abby lying face down on the floor. Most of the officers who interviewed Borden reported they disliked her attitude. Some said she was too calm and poised. Despite her quote-unquote attitude and changing alibi, she was not checked for bloodstains. So here's something important. Maggie reported that and had noted during court, and I'll say it now just to clarify this statement, that Lizzie Borden was actually wearing an unstained blue dress when they found Andrew on the couch.
Do you think she went and changed real quick?
That is one of the theories.
Yeah. But she would have blood in her hair and her face, all, you know?
Right.
That's she couldn't just clean that quick.
Because now, I guess they said earlier in the day she had a red dress on and then but at the time of the finding of the body, she's not in a blue dress. So it's hard to, now I'm going to, we can also say this about when we talked about the Vliskax murders, about how much blood they said was in the scene. Of course, granted, there was more bodies. But you got to remember, these are all head wounds, and head wounds bleed profusely.
Yep.
I've seen head wounds personally in my old line of work. Even superficial head wounds bleed a lot.
Oh, yeah. Even my nosebleed gushes blood.
Like, if you guys look at old footage of, like wrestlers from, like, the 70s, 80s, and 90s when they would cut themselves, like, and they would just, like, cut themselves a little bit, like, on the scalp or the forehead bleeds. Bleed a lot.
Oh yeah,
they look, and that's because of the fact that they're capillary wounds or so they're pretty superficial. But capillary bleeds look like a lot, like they just have that image that they look a lot. But any head wound bleeds profusely,
right?
And with the type of wounds that Andrew and Abby got, there's going to be a lot of blood, a lot of brain, a lot of tissue. So the theory is that one of the theories is, well, then maybe Lizzie changed. But in this time frame, you're talking like an hour. So she has an hour to not just change, but wash all the blood off of her face, her hair, her hands, her arms. It's a lot of time. And dresses back in this time period were not easy to get on and off.
No. You had the, what do they call it? What's the thing? The corset? Is that what it is?
A lot of them,
the thing that squeezes you.
Or a petticoat.
Right.
So you'd have like a corset or a petticoat, and plus to get the dress on, or a slip, and then the dress, it's a lot of work. In some cases, depending on how elaborate the dresses are, it can take two people to put on.
Oh, yeah.
In the basement, police found two hatchets, two axes, and a hatchet head with a broken handle. The hatchet head was suspected of being the murder weapon, as the break in the handle appeared fresh and the ash and dust on the head, unlike that on the other bladed tools, appeared to have been deliberately applied to make it as look as it had been in the basement for some time. However, none of these tools were removed from the house. And because of the mysterious illness that had stricken the household before the murders, the family's milk and Andrew's and Abby's stomachs, removed during the autopsies performed in the board and dining room. How odd is that?
Yeah.
Were tested for poison and none was found. Residents suspected Lizzie of purchasing hydrocyanic acid in a diluted form from the local drugstore. Now, this was brought up, and they actually brought a pharmacist in because they suspected poisoning at first. And during the trial, they brought the pharmacist in, and the pharmacist did say that the day before the murders, Lizzie did go in there and asking for a certain poison. I do believe it was the hydrocyanic acid.
Why would a pharmacy sell that?
Well, back then they sold all kinds of stuff.
It's so weird.
You could get arsenic.
Yeah.
From behind the counter. Like,
that's so, I guess there's uses for it, but still, I mean.
Well, that's one of the reasons why arsenic poisoning was so prevalent back in like the 1800s.
Yeah.
Like you just go to the pharmacy, go to the drugstore, buy a bottle of arsenic.
It's so weird, dude. You
know? So it wasn't that hard, but they used to do that all the time. Like that was just something they had, because you could use all these different poisons for different things as well.
Right.
You know, varmint control, pest control. In this case, Lizzie said she was going to use the acid to clean her furs despite. They said that she was going to use it to clean her furs.
Okay.
But the medical examiner said that it does not have antiseptic properties. Lizzie's and Emma's friend Alice Russell also decided to stay with them the night following the murders, while Moore spent the night in the attic guest room, contrary to later accounts that he slept in the murder site guest room. Police stationed around the house on the night of the August 4th, during which an officer said he had seen Borden enter the cellar with Russell carrying a kerosene lamp and a slop pail. He stated he saw both women exit the cellar, after which Borden returned alone, though he was unable to see what she was doing. He stated it appeared that she was bent over the sink. And then on August 5th, Morris left the house and was mobbed by hundreds of people. Police had to escort him back to the house. On August 6th, police conducted a more thorough search of the house, inspecting the sister's clothing, confiscating the broken-handled hatchet head. So, what? Now, a day or two after the murder? So why would you wait that long to do all that?
Bad police work?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Pretty much.
They didn't take things as serious back then, or they didn't have the resources. Well,
I mean, it's just like the Velisca case. I mean, remember when they were letting all those people in the house?
Mm-hmm.
Like how, I mean, and forensics wasn't what it was today. So any forensic evidence that they could use back then during the Velisca murder, we talked about that, was all ruined.
I don't think they even had fingerprints back then. They didn't. It was just like, it was pretty much their evidence was word of mouth, like, oh, you went to the dry cleaner at this time? Did you see him there? Yeah. Okay.
I mean,
that was their evidence.
I know this thing, a lot of it back then was just like, I mean, your textbook old school police work.
Yeah.
So it was
interviews,
getting physical evidence, alibis, that you had at the time.
Yeah. Blood.
Blood.
Yeah. Footprints.
Yeah. I mean, and that's how they did a lot of it back then. And of course, you know, that's why a lot of killers got away. Like the Velisca
killer.
That's
why Clue was so hard.
We didn't have DNA.
Yeah.
You're just sitting there checking boxes. I don't know. I'm losing count. Oh my God. So it wasn't Mr. Green Colonel with Mustard. The candlestick?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Then I checked the wrong box. Remember opening up the envelope and then like, oh man, I was so wrong.
Oh yeah. I used to love Clue.
I did too. It was a good game. I need to get that for me and the kids.
The movie with Tim Curry was good, too.
Well, it's got Tim Curry.
Yeah.
So that's an automatic.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's goofy, but it's good. Wasn't Martin Mull in it?
It's almost like Knives Out.
Yeah.
Knives Out is like the new Clue.
It really is.
It's like the same thing.
Wasn't Martin Mull in Clue? Wasn't he Mr. Green?
I think so. Yeah.
That sounds right.
I haven't seen it for so long.
Me neither.
It's a good movie.
It was a good
movie. I'm surprised they haven't remade it. They remake everything.
But now you say that, and that's going to go into the zeitgeist. That's true. And now it's going
to
be
remade. I guess Knives Out would be the closest thing to a remake, though.
It would be.
It was
and kind of phenomenal. In the same spirit, really. Really not too serious, no. But it's still semi-serious.
They made a Lizzie Borden movie with Christina Ricci. Did you see that?
No.
Yeah.
Was she Lizzie Borden?
Yeah.
I would watch that.
I would, too.
She's smoking
She used
hot.
To be cute.
She still is.
Yeah.
Oh, she's even better than ever.
Yeah.
Do you see where I don't know if it was like an artist rendition or if she actually did it, but she put on the what was the mom's name in Adam's Family?
Oh.
Morticia.
Remember. Morticia, yeah.
But she puts on Morticia's gown.
Uh-huh.
Oh my God.
Uh-huh.
Just so
I remember her in Ghostbusters. Not Ghostbusters. Casper.
That's where I developed my crush on her.
Yeah. Remember when her dad dies?
Yeah.
He just walks out of the bar and falls in a hole and then he's dead. Yeah. It's like your dad's a moron. He drank all night and then he just falls in a hole and now he's got to live with these guys.
Yeah.
Like the other ghosts.
Yeah.
The cousins or whatever.
That was a good movie.
Yeah.
For the time. I just remember that's where I developed my crush on Christina Ricci.
Yeah.
And now as an adult and her looking the way she does, I'm like, still.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not changed.
Nope, she's not bad.
Mm-mm, nope.
Anyway.
Still yummy. So they take all the evidence, and one of the things they noticed, and it doesn't explain it here in the article, but one of the things that they noticed on all the axe heads is that they were all clean. Yeah. There wasn't blood on any of them.
So either they cleaned it or they took it with them. Or hit it, or threw it, you know?
It's very possible.
They would have found it if they threw it. They probably took it with them.
Yeah.
Or threw it in a river. There's a river there.
Was there?
There's a river there. A river runs through it.
Oh, my God.
No, but there is a river there. You didn't say that. Whoever knew, if it was somebody in the town, if it was Lizzie, you know, she could have known to just go throw it in the river. Yeah. They never would have looked.
No.
You know?
Well, oh, man, even if they did, I mean.
Good luck finding it. They didn't have technology back then.
No.
Good luck. They didn't have scuba divers back then.
I mean, what's
your
dive team going to be? A guy with a garden hose?
They didn't have scuba divers. That's nuts.
You're basically just kicking around and sifting.
Plus, this was winter, right? When did this happen? Or was summer? Okay. Yeah, they wouldn't have found it.
No, absolutely not. No. So, at this point, we can kind of stop here because at this point forward, it's the inquest and trial, which we'll
do. And
then
speculation. We'll get into that next time.
Yeah. So as far as we know right now, Lizzie's suspect number one. They do know that. That is their suspect.
Brother-in-law, suspect two.
Yeah, the ex-brother-in-law is suspect two, and we can get more into that as well because like we said, they did have like a heated discussion the night before about business and stuff.
We've got Lizzie, we've got ex-brother-in-law, and we've got unnamed mystery person, right? Someone that just could have been there, like somebody that hated Andrew.
That was, the officers had three leading theories.
If you hated Andrew, why would you, A, leave Lizzie alive, or B, why would you kill his wife if you hated Andrew? Like, either you kill the wife and Lizzie and Andrew, or you just kill Andrew.
Well, see, here's the thing in the article that kind of contradicts some of the other reports. Because some of the reports say that they killed Andrew first. Mm-hmm. Abby saw the murder, and then she ran up to the bedroom to escape the murderer. The murderer attacked her in the bedroom, so she actually died second.
Yeah, first of all, always run down. And like horror movies, don't run up into the bedroom. Don't run up into, run down and get out of the house.
Yeah, surely the house had a back door, right?
Get out of the house. Don't run up because you're just pigeonholing yourself when you do that.
Yeah, there's nowhere to go.
They do that in every movie and it pisses me off,
like, unless
dude.
There's a shotgun in the room you're running to, there's no point.
No.
There's no point.
They're going to get you.
Also, for those of you with a morbid sense of curiosity, which if you're listening to this podcast, you probably do. You can Google the images of Andrew and Abby's body.
It's messed up.
And it's one of the greatest early crime scene photographs. Yeah. Like, that's when they really...
It's like Black Dahlia Murder. You see that, and you're like, ew, yeah. That's nasty.
And you can actually see pictures, like, after... like after the trial and stuff, they actually took all the tissues and stuff off the skull.
Yep.
And they took pictures of that. Like, Andrew's skull, like one half of it's basically caved in.
Yeah.
And then Abby, she's got like a massive chunk missing out of one upper portion of her skull.
Yeah.
It's absolutely brutal. Absolutely brutal. But if you're into that type of thing, crime scene photos, I'm not into gore and all,
I like true crime, but I don't like the gory. I don't like the fit, the actual, you know what I mean?
Right.
I don't like that.
Well, if you do, those pictures are available on Google Images. Yeah.
Just it's like saying. The first time I saw the Chris Farley death pic.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I don't like this, you know?
Yeah. It's a little.
It's gross.
Yeah.
It's just weird.
Like I said, I'm a little desensitized to that.
Yeah.
A little bit. But
yeah,
I just see dead bodies for a while.
Yeah, I just don't. There's no reason for me to look at it, so I can get the gist of the story without seeing it.
True.
You know,
I kind of like want to pair up like some, because you know someone will write an article and you're looking at the picture, going no, you're
yeah.
I don't know where you got your facts, but the picture proved that wrong.
Right.
So sometimes I look just to make sure that the person writing the article maybe knows what they're talking about, but otherwise, I mean, for me, it's just like, oh yeah, that's what that inside of that looks like.
Yeah, it's like I remember when I was in a car and I looked at the Black Dahlia picture for the first time and I got sick. I got car sick because it just made me like, whoop.
Yeah, as far as crime scene
and she goes, just looks like a mannequin. It's not that disgusting.
I mean, honestly, to look at her in the crime scene photo.
Yeah.
Or the pre-autopsy photo, you wouldn't think it's a person.
It just made me sick. It was so funny.
It's just one of those things, but yeah, around the time of the axe murders, the Lizzie Borden axe murders, that's when crime scene photography first really started becoming a thing.
Yeah.
And they're probably one of the most gruesome ones.
Oh yeah.
As far as
besides the log cabin we covered, the Keddie cabin yeah. was probably the most brutal crime scene ever.
Oh yeah.
I mean, it was worse than this.
I forgot. We did that. Yeah.
That they say that crime scene is the worst that's ever.
I can't imagine. Yeah, I would by far be worse.
Yeah. But yeah, that's part one.
Yeah, that's part one. So part two will be the inquest, the trial, the aftermath, and the paranormal portion.
Speculation of
speculations.
Yeah.
And that's kind of it. Kind of sorry about the TikTok guy. Like I said, I thought we were going to do it all today, but with everything that is involved in it, we just decided to make it a two-part.
It's yeah, if we covered it all, that'd be 3 hours.
We'd probably be here at least 2 hours doing covering how we want to cover it.
Yeah.
So with that said, hope you guys have an awesome weekend.
Yep.
Be safe out there. I know it's rainy out there here in Indiana, but have a fun weekend anyway.
Yep.